The Producers, featuring the most respected international talent in the world of audio production and voiceover. Radio, TV, film, and online. In-depth interviews, industry insights, putting you on the inside. This is The Producers Podcast with Ryan Dream.
Hey, podcast time. Hello, thanks for joining me as always. Big guest today, and it is a big episode. The 80th edition of The Producers Podcast, and I would say for an episode of this magnitude, I mean, really, it's all kind of arbitrary. Is there a big difference between 79 and 80? 80 and 90? Anyway, it is a privilege to have been able to speak to so many different amazing people. But like I said, for a big episode like number 80, I've got a big talent in Mitch Faulkner, the one and the only. He is another one of those talents, one of the people I interview that I would say most, if not all, coming to the show will at least know his voice if they don't already just know who he is. So Mitch Faulkner is the guest. That interview's coming up in a minute. I'll play, actually going to kick it off with some of the more classic hip-hop and R&B sound that he does. It's a relatively fresh demo that he just sent me. And I'll have a link right here on the podcast page. You can go over to a website that actually I learned in the show. It was a buddy of his that set it up, but there's some other demos there you can check out and read more about Mitch as well. The original voice of urban radio, Mitch is heard across the country and at his peak on over 180 radio stations. Like I said, one of those very signature sounds in radio imaging. Let me tell you quickly, I've got another interview already in the can, so I can tell you for sure that Drew the Voice Guy, that's his website, drewthevoiceguy.com, also DJ Goofy White Kid, Drew Hall, gonna be a guest. He's still the imaging producer of the WFLZ in Tampa. FLZ has produced three or four just, you know, top-tier imaging talents in the world. And now I will have had three of them on this podcast. So, yeah, it's cool like that. Anyway, Drew Hall is going to be the next guest, and that'll basically be posted after I'm taking myself a little trip to Vegas. And so, you know, probably about 3 weeks from now, I'm trying to do a three-week span. It's either 3 or 4 weeks between episodes. Anyway, Drew Hall is coming up, and then I will be cruising through plenty of interviews after that. Still taking your requests, but you can get all the information on the website. For now, let's end the intro. Let's get into the interview with the one and the only Mitch Faulkner.
Test.
Today's R&B.
Turn it up.
Yeah, man.
And classic hip hop.
I remember that classic hip hop.
Just pump your volume up and play it loud.
This is Pumpin' 106.1.
Pumpin' up.
Pumpin' 106.1.
Everybody, let me hear you say,
louder.
Classic hip hop all day. Every day. Excuse us while we hit you in your memory bank.
Let me refresh your memory.
And excuse us while we turn up today's R&B. Nobody.
Ain't nobody doing like this.
Nobody gets you pumped.
I am just so honored to be joined by one of the premier voices in the industry, but also just a premier talent in radio, a guy I've had requested and finally was able to reach out and just so generous with your time, the one and only Mitch Faulkner. Mitch, thank you so much for being on the show. I really appreciate it.
Thank you very much for having me.
I can say I've actually seen this now a couple times. I've heard it. The original voice of urban radio. Is that something you're proud of?
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. It's not something that I gave myself, but a lot of right. people have started to say that over the years because of the length of time I've been doing this stuff. So I guess I'll accept it.
Yeah. You'll accept it. I had kind of previewed that you were going to be on the show, I don't know, a couple times in the last episode or two, and I had more than one person reach out. You know, whether you know it or not, and we'll get into this in a little bit about the whole mentor-mentee relationships or, you know, the influences in our life, but it seems pretty clear to me that you're an influence in a lot of people's lives. A, are you aware of that? And B, do you have people reach out to you, kind of young people in this industry talking to you?
Absolutely. I mean, all the time. I would say at least two or three times a week, somebody will call and get some advice, opinions. I listen to people's work and give critiques and that kind of thing, just kind of helping helping the guys stay afloat and staying on top of their game.
Yeah. Yeah, that's great. I mean, it's important for everybody to have it, but you've been around the block now. Now the climate changes, but at one point, you were on over 180 radio stations. I've read that a couple different places online. But
yes,
was this in the pre-digital era? You know, when you were at your peak, or at least when you were dealing in the triple digits of stations, was this before you could just fire off an MP3 at people?
Absolutely. We had an operation. It was called On Mic Productions, or OMP for an acronym. But
sure.
We actually started the company in 87. And in 89, my brother joined forces with me and helped me out with the company. We kind of developed into the place to stop for urban imaging. And we had four studios. We had the entire space was like 4,400 square feet. So we had four studios in there. And we were working on analog 8-track machines with the Atari 2-tracks to master the product. And we put it in, put the product on a 5-inch reel and fired off to FedEx. And we kind of bridged the gap there in the mid to late 90s is when we started to getting into transmitting via MP3s. And also we had a satellite connection with a couple of stations in Chicago when Gannett Broadcasting owned WGCI in Chicago. We were sending their audio via satellite. So we've been kind of across the bridge, where we kind of bridged the gap in terms of the digital to analog. We made the transition. The first digital setup we used was the Roland DM80, a lot of people will remember that unit. And then from there to the Roland DM800, which was a progression of the original machine. But it had 28 minutes of 8-track recording time. And we had a 750 megabyte hard drive.
Wow, that big, huh?
So we thought we were really doing it back then.
Well, you were, though. That's the thing at the time. So you, at one point, like I mentioned, you were up there in the 180 plus station range. You're firing off reels via FedEx. You know, just to voice the copy, you obviously, you know, everybody's skills get to a point and you can, you know, kind of knock stuff out. But the part that took the longest is actually packaging it, shipping it, you know. If you had, I don't even know, like how many stations, how much copy could you get done and shipped in one day at that time?
We were averaging about 25 to 30 pieces of work per day. And when I say we, after we got to the point where we had the four studios, I had four full-time producers, including myself. So we had five producers on deck. And what I would do was in the mornings when I would come in, I would read all the copy for that day.
Okay.
And that would probably take at least 2 or 3 hours to get through the sessions. And then we would distribute it to the producers based on the stations that they're handled, so we could keep the imaging sound consistent for the stations. And I had the chore of remembering what type of attitude and sound that each station had. And so what I would do was we would record what the program director, you know, we would save what the programmer said that they liked. And if I ever got off track, I would play that piece back just to get in the zone for that particular read and read that. And then the producers would actually produce it out. So it was almost like an assembly line, per se, of doing the work, because we would read the product in the morning, split it up between the producers, and then produce. And I had a couple of young ladies that were, one was a receptionist and one was a traffic director. And their job was, once the production was completed, they would take the order, create the label, and put it in the box and get it ready for FedEx that evening for the pickup. And that was our system.
That's crazy. So now you've led me. This happens to me a lot. I have 15 different things I want to ask. Let me start here. How did you figure out or learn a system? You know, because oftentimes us radio folk, you know, we're creative, you know, we're good at that mm-hmm. side, but actually operating a business or creating systems might not be our strength. How did you come up with a system that worked for you, or did you have somebody else that you had looked up to and saw how they did it?
Well, Ryan, we didn't have anybody to mimic at that time in terms of doing it that way. And, you know, my background was, before I started the production company, I was a program director for a couple of radio stations. So I understood managing a creative staff, and I envisioned in my head how the thing would work. And then actually teaching the system to the staff was the biggest challenge. And mm-hmm. getting people to understand it. So anytime we had new personnel to come in, once the system was intact, they just fall right in line. But going through the development process was that oftentimes I would read, you know, I felt that my voice was stronger in the mornings when I got up. So I would read all of my work for that day, and then I would sit there and then edit and produce, you know, the rest of the day. So when we started to add producers, I would teach them the same process. And mm-hmm. so that way it was easy for us to have four producers on staff and producing around the clock. We would get started around 9 o'clock in the morning, and we'd go until the FedEx bell would ring, which was around about 8 o'clock and in the evening. So it was a process, but working there was interesting because we all had fun. We had stress relief things that we would do. We'd play video games in the middle of the day. We had enough space in the back parking lot. We had a couple of four-wheelers. We'd go out there and ride around for a few minutes and come back in. So it was just a matter of keeping the creative juices flowing and having a staff that understood what the goal was and making sure that we put the best product out.
You mentioned actually a little while ago, you weren't really referring to this, but it made me think of it. You have different reads, obviously. You said you had some stations that wanted this read, and you'd pull up their sample sometimes. But I'm just curious. You know, sometimes people can get kind of locked into a style, or, you know, when you think of Mitch Faulkner, you sort of think of that read. But mm-hmm. in your opinion, you know, how many different reads do you have, or how many different styles are you called upon? And then what are some of your favorites?
Well, first of all, you know, back when we started, urban radio was just urban radio, but a lot of guys had different ways they would format the stations. That was before it was considered urban AC, which was more laid back, and you had Rhythmic CHR or hip hop stations, you know, which was more hyped and pumped up. And so it would affect that change and the difference in the style and way it was produced. But in terms of developing a style, I guess I would consider myself as having a style, but actually I consider myself like a guitar. And if you can imagine that, and I would have to teach the program directors how to work with our company, because a lot of program directors didn't know how to write imaging. And if they could write, they didn't know how to instruct us in terms of producing it. So what I would tell the program directors is that if you can imagine a guitar, and God bless his soul, B.B. King is gone, but if you give that guitar to B.B. King, it's a blues guitar. You take the same guitar and give it to Van Halen, it's a rock guitar. You know, you take the same guitar and give it to George Benson, it's a jazz guitar. So as a voice talent and an imaging talent, you have to be the same, have the same flexibility as the guitar, with the program director or imaging director from the station being the musician, so to speak. So he can direct me on how he wants his station to sound. And once I get that locked in, then I would keep that sample to keep me on point when I'm doing something. If I start with you 6 months later, you send me a piece of copy, I need to send you the same kind of attitude for your station. You know, so that was the way we would actually produce consistently for each radio station, even though we had 180 stations.
Yeah, I was going to say, I mean, because, you know, if somebody's got 50 stations, they still would have a difficult time remembering that, mm-hmm. you know, this little station here likes it when I do, you know, whatever. The 180, though, on that type of a scale, or, you know, even in the 70, 80 range, that's so interesting. I haven't heard an analogy like that with the guitar. And it's almost like you're saying, look, I am as talented as you need me to be, but I can only do what you need me to do. And and you're kind of putting it on the program directors in an appropriate manner to say, you know, if you can't communicate whether I'm jazz today or whether I'm urban today, or, you know, then there's nothing I can do for you. You know, it's an interesting way to look at it.
And that was the thing that made us different, because we did not do cookie cutter drops. We didn't say more music with a better variety and then just tack on somebody's call letters from one station to the next. Because when I say more music with a better variety for your station, which may be Urban AC, it may be more music with a better variety. And if you've got a radio station that's rhythmic CHR, it's like more music with a better variety. You know, so it's just it's the same phrase, but a different way to say it. And it's up to the program director to tell me, you know, effectively what they want. And I still stand on this today that if you can tell me what you want, 99% of the time I can get it for you on the first go round. But some people are less creative in terms of directors, and they'll send you a script and you say, okay, well, how do you want me to read it? Oh, just do your thing. And then once you do it and they get it, then they say, well, I like that, but can you say this a little different? Well, if you'd have told me that the first place, we'd have been done already. But, you know, but being in this business, you learn the patience and the tolerance to understand what a guy wants, because if he's really on his game as a program director, he should have a vision in how he wants his station to be perceived. And the imaging voice should be, in a better term, it should be the stationality. You know, the jocks change during the day. You got your morning show, your midday, your afternoon. But when the imaging comes on, you want it to be that same voice and that same attitude that carries the weight of the station, you know, sort of like the, in essence, exactly what it is. You become the brand. So you have to make sure that you're consistent with that. You can't come on today with one attitude and tomorrow you got a different attitude. You know, you're doing a contest today to give away cash. Next month you may be doing a car, but you need the same attitude and the sound on that particular piece to make it work for the radio station.
Before I get into the whole program director side of things real fast, I do want to follow up. People know you for a few different reads, and I played a sample of your imaging at the front there. But, you know, is there a style that you really enjoy doing?
Classic rock is what I really enjoy. I mean, that was my entry into radio. When I first started, it was AOR, you know, in Kentucky, my hometown. I worked at a rock station. So what's considered classic rock now was current for us. When we was playing Smoke on the Water with Deep Purple, that was a current record. Uh-huh. Now it's a classic rock song. Or when I'm playing China Grove from the Doobie Brothers or something like that, it's a different thing. But nowadays, I mean, if I could just do one format, I would choose classic rock. But unfortunately, the industry doesn't. The industry has a weird way of looking at things. They look at it because I'm an African American. It's very difficult for me to get into another format because of my face, you know, and in
which
terms of the sound.
But
you know, there are a lot of non-African Americans that are doing imaging for urban stations. They don't consider the fact that the guy that's actually doing the voice may be of a different ethnic background, but he's delivering the sound. But when it comes to me switching over to doing classic, oh, he's a black guy. We really wouldn't want him to do the imaging for a classic rock station. But what happens when I send the demo, and if the person is not familiar with my name, which is very few, you know, they like it. But once they get a chance to know who you are, they decide they want to go with a different direction.
Man, so you need a you need a, like a pen name for the classic rock side of your business, just to keep that preconceived notion out of people's brains. Just send it off as, you know, Bill Smith or something.
Right. I need a character. Somebody told me I should create a character sort of like the Geico lizard. So they're not looking at the face, they're just listening to the voice, you know?
Right. Yeah, yeah. I'd noticed that, though. I was actually checking out your website. Are we directing people to MitchFaulkner.com or another way to go check stuff out about you and hear more demos?
Actually, I don't have a real website. That website that's up there now, a friend of mine put that up, you know, just said, hey, let me create a website for you.
Oh, okay.
They did that. I don't really manage that website, but okay. I haven't done that because nowadays I work independently. And I'm afraid if I put up a website, I'll get overwhelmed in work and can't deliver the product. So right now, as one guy in one studio, I'm serving 47 radio stations. And so that's enough to keep me busy. And then I also have clients for concert tours and stuff like that, that have festivals and all kinds of stuff that happens during the summer. So it's a difficult thing. I think if I put up a website, I'd probably get 20 orders a day and couldn't turn them all out. So I just
that's
used to kind of deal.
Mm-hmm. It's a nice problem to have, right? Where you don't
absolutely
put up a-
it's a wonderful problem to have. You know, people call me all the time, and you know, sometimes depending on what they want, sometimes I can't. You know, I have to turn jobs down, which is a good thing, which I don't like to do it, but I'd rather do that than taking a job and not turning the product around on time and then have my name dragged through the mud. So I'd rather say I can't do it right now. If you want to come back, we can try it. But, you know.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Admittedly, I didn't go research this aspect of you. I just wanted to hear all about it cold in the interview. Do you have representation, various agents, any agents, and how much of your work is acquired via third-party sources?
Ryan, at this point, I have no representation, but I am creating a package now to send to Jason Gart and the guys with Mixed Talent down in Florida.
Oh, yeah.
And we've been talking about getting together, and as long as it's dry voice, which is what I'm offering to them, then we've got a deal. But most of the stuff that comes to me now, I produce it as well. So this will be my first time in my entire career of having somebody to represent me and to get work for me. I'm also signed up with Benstown, and you know, they provided one radio station for me. So I'm going to go with the Mixed Talent group out of Florida with Jason Gart and those guys there. They have a great business plan, and they've been doing some good stuff. So I hung out with him a couple of months ago when he was here for a convention, and so we actually come across a good deal. So we're going to start working together coming up in the future. But fortunately, because of the reputation and the name recognition, you know, people call me, you know, and I'm not using to say that as a from an ego standpoint, but it's satisfying when people call you and say, hey, can I get you in this market? Or are you available here? And that kind of thing. And so it works for me.
Yeah, that's great. I had a feeling you weren't represented because, as I said, I didn't do a lot of research, but I hadn't seen it. And it's just an interesting world. You know, some people think they can't live without their agents, and I say plural, you know, and then, of course, there's others. Now, it's possible that you are one of the select few who built up such a reputation and such a client list at the right time in radio, you know, in its heyday, that you're one of the few that have been able to just, you know, cruise with that.
Exactly.
Yeah. So, and obviously that's not just a good thing. It's a great thing. But on the commercial side, you know, I know you're doing, you know, all your concert spots and non-radio imaging work. But are you unable to really do a lot of focus then onto like commercial or industrial or other types of voiceover simply because you're a one-man shop and you've got all this imaging work to do?
Yeah, I don't take auditions for commercials. I have clients that use me because they've used me before, you know, to do commercial work. But no, I don't. Actually, when people contact me, they're looking for imaging and concerts and parties and that kind of thing, which has been my calling card. But, you know, to kind of sum it up, what keeps me going is I'm going to give you a real example. You may be familiar with the name Elroy Smith, who's a program director. I started with Elroy back in the 80s when he was at WILD, which was a daytime AM station in Boston, right? And so then he went from there to Jams in Dallas, which was a 100,000-watt FM-er. Mm-hmm. And at the time, I was on with Michael Spears at KKDA in Dallas.
Oh, yeah?
So I was competing against him in Dallas. And so when he left Dallas, he got a job in Chicago at WGCI. And so then he brought me to Chicago. And so when he left Chicago, he went to Philadelphia, and he brought me to Philadelphia. And when he left, when he was in Philadelphia, he was the cluster manager for Radio 1, whatever you want to call that title, and he brought me to Washington, D.C. So from one person, I got Chicago, Philadelphia, and D.C.
Yeah.
And I'm still doing those markets, even though he's continued on to another path. And so that has been my ability to do that. The same thing with the guy by the name of Michael Saunders. I was on with him in Charlotte, North Carolina, when he left there and he went to, now he's in Orlando, Florida. I'm in Orlando on WCFB. So it's one of those situations where relationships has been what has sustained my business, you know. And so now with the program directors, the generations that are in there now, which are a lot younger than I am, that's why I'm going to go with the mixed talent group, because some guys may not know who I am. Or the other era that we make in this industry is we think of a person, oh, that guy was big in the 80s and 90s. And they'll think, well, he can't do anything that's going to be effective now because he's past the bar. But the difference is in the production. You know, my voice is, like I said, like a guitar. And so working with the guys at Mix Group, they're producers that produce a lot different than I do. All they need to do is to direct me in terms of what they want as far as the sound and the voice. And we come up with something new and fresh all the time.
Yeah, I have no doubt that you would still be completely relevant now. And it might be a factor of people not knowing who you are because it has been a while. There's a whole influx of new people. I tell you, the one thing that stood out to me is the fact that, now you said you were at about like just under 50 stations. I think you might have said 47, but and you're producing that imaging, just dry work. Okay.
No, most of them are dry voice because the stations have creative directors in the building. And so they send me the script. You know, so far today I've done WVON in Chicago. I've done KNEK in Lafayette, Louisiana. I've done WRRX in Pensacola, Florida, and WHBX in Pensacola, Florida. And that's today. So that's four different cities. And those have all been dry voice. But there's two stations in the Cumulus network that I have that are fully produced, which is the station down in Tallahassee. So I produce their stuff out, you know, completely. So it doesn't take long, you know, with the time I've been doing this and the experience. I mean, I can read copy, you know, pretty quickly. And so doing the dry voice stuff, there's been times like at the beginning of rating periods or Mother's Day or Father's Day or somebody passed or something like that, you know, I may get 15 to 20 orders in one day and have them done before, you know, 4 o'clock in the afternoon. So, you know, it's a good deal.
So I was going to ask switch gears a little bit here into the tech side. Obviously, you have some proficiency because you built up studios way back when, then you switched over to digital. So what kind of gear are you using and how in depth do you go? You know, are you on a Mac? Are you on a PC? What editor do you use and what kind of toys do you like to have when you produce?
Well, first of all, you know, when I first got in the industry, I was working with a guy in Kentucky that was a first class engineer, and he had contracts for radio stations and the police station FM band radios. So I learned the technical part before I actually started doing radio. And the way I got into radio working with him, he was providing one of the radio stations with a sound system to do appearances. You know, the announcers would come out and they would do gigs or discos back in those days. So we'd go out and set up the sound system, and the radio station DJ would come and he'd play the music and we'd break it down and go home. Well, we had a situation where one of the DJs didn't show up, and the guy said, well, you go and talk to them. They want to hear something, you know, just playing the music. And that's how I started DJing. So when the radio station found out about it, they asked me to come and do an audition, and that was at the Rock station. And that's how I got in. So to answer your question, every studio I've ever worked in, I built it from the ground up. I mean, from the cabinetry, the wiring and setup of the studios, even when we had the OMP. And also on my record, I built the studio that Tom Joyner is in right now. I designed the studio and worked with an architect to get the official blueprint drawings, and we set it up. And right over there in the building, not too far from you, you know, where Tom is right now.
So this is while you're voicing and producing like 100 and some odd stations. You just go build Tom Joyner's studio?
No, I was working with Tom at that time. That was in 2004, I don't know, 2004 or 5. I worked with Tom for 2 years as creative director for the Tom Joyner Morning Show. And so while I was there, that's when I had gone independent. And I was doing, I had about 35 stations that I was doing on my off time and then working full time for Tom.
It's like a lot of people, 35 stations would be the job. You know, they wouldn't also be full-time with Tom Joyner, which is no small gig.
No, it was exciting. But getting down to the equipment that I'm using today, I use Adobe Audition because I think it's a lot faster. When I was working with Tom, we used Pro Tools. But,
sure.
And the Mac platform, which I'm familiar with both of those. You know, Mac has gone way out there now. It's been a while since I've worked with. I wouldn't know which version of Pro Tool is out right now, but I use Adobe Audition CC. I use I have a Behringer console. I use a RE20 microphone. I have the voice processor is a 528 Symmetrics processor. And a lot of times when I've done panels and workshops and seminars at conventions, and so when it gets down to the microphone, I remember doing one with Pat Garrett, Dr. Dave, Jason Gart, and some other imaging guys. We were all on a panel down in Miami. So someone asked a question, said, what type of microphone do you use? And that answer is for each person on the panel. So when it got to me, at that time I was using an MXL 2003 microphone. And that's a $99 piece of equipment. So when it got to me, and I said, well, I use an MXL. And Pat Garrett leaned over and said, come on, Uncle Mitch, tell them what you're using for real. You know, we would share information. I said, no, that's it. And so then they would, so some of the guys on the panel said, I'm using a Norman microphone. I'm using the Sennheiser shotgun microphone.
Yeah.
And I'm doing this. And so then it got into a debate as to which was the better microphone. And so, and I leaned into the mic. I said, let me ask a question for you, those of you in the audience. Said, any of you guys listen to the radio on the way here? People raised their hands. So I pointed out two people and asked them to stand up. And I said, what did you hear on the radio? I heard imaging. I heard commercials. I said, when you heard the imaging for that station, could you tell me what kind of microphone they use? And they
said,
no. I said, well, can you tell me, were they using Pro Tools or Adobe Audition or something else, so Saw or whatever, you know, for the editor platform.
Yeah.
No. I said, it doesn't make a difference. It comes down to your talent and your understanding of audio and recording in order to get a good sound out of what you're listening to. You know, and so I live by that. You know, I don't lean on the equipment to make me sound good. I use my understanding of audio, signal path, and recording technique. And then my ability to manipulate sound effects and sweepers and that kind of thing. You know, it's like, for a long time, you know, we would get sweeper packages, you know, maybe two CDs. And so if they've got a whoosh on there and you want a whoosh bang, then you find the bang and you put the two together, you know, rather than saying, well, I don't have a whoosh bang. I just got a whoosh. So that was the moniker that kind of kept me on top of the game, because I don't get caught up in the latest device that's out for producing. You know, it's like, what does it do? That's my first question. And they say, it does this. And I can say, oh, I can get that from a plug-in, or I can reroute my microphone signal a different way to get a different effect. You know, I use, back in the day when we did On Mic Productions, I was using a Shure SM5B, which is a big football-looking microphone, mm-hmm. and it's a cardioid dynamic mic. I was running that into a preamp, and I'm taking a preamp. It was a basic Behringer preamp, and I was taking a line output of that preamp into a Dromer compressor. So that gave me a hotter signal going in. So I know if the signal is hot and then I hit it with compression, it makes the voice thicker. So I was able to get the same sound or better than what guys were using an Avalon or a Focusrite signal processor. You know, right now the Symmetrics 528 that I have, I bought it back in the day. I've got two of them, so if one blows. But it was $325 out the box. And I checked the other day. They stopped making a thing for a minute. They came back. Now they sell it for $800 and some because of the fact that people know that the Symmetrics voice processor is a great unit for what we do.
Uh-huh.
You know? So that's the way that that I've always functioned around equipment and recording platforms. Just, you know. So using the Adobe Audition is intuitive to me. So it's very fast. I can do because you know how it is when you do imaging, you may have three reads in one 10-second drop. And then inside of that, you may have four or five different elements, like a sound effect or a hit or a voice bite from somebody else. And so you don't have all day to sit there and play with it like you do in Pro Tools. And then when you mix it down, it mixes down in less time than, you know, Pro Tools mixes down in real time. Whereas,
yeah, well, the new, just so you know, the new version, they finally introduced offline bounce, just so you know.
Oh, okay.
After all these years. Yeah.
What is this, 2015? Come on.
yeah. Well, you know, it took them 11 versions, but they did it anyway.
Yeah. But, you know, I tell folks all the time, I say, hey, if I got Alicia Keys in the studio, I'm using Pro Tools, but it's just me, so I'm using Audition.
You know what? If you'll indulge me, I have a feeling that I don't even need an answer to the first question, but really the most important tool as a voice actor is the voice and how you use
exactly.
it.
Exactly.
So if you're going to, you know, and I'll leave my final question here for just a minute, which is a much grander scale scenario, but if you're going to give some advice to some young talents or people that are really infatuated with gear, you know, what is the first thing they should be thinking about in relation to their voice? You mentioned mic technique, but I mean, you know, do you get coaching? Have you ever had to get coaching? Do you read? Do you watch? You know, what do you do or what do you recommend people do to get their voice or their performance where it needs to be?
Well, it's just like becoming a singer or a guitar player. And I say that in terms of you have to find a target, a goal. So if you're a singer and you want to become a great singer, you say, well, I want to sing like Luther Vandross. Well, the first thing you do is you play Luther Vandross records and you sing along with them until you can master his style. And then you start adding your own affectations or runs into it. So the same thing happened, you know, for me. No, I didn't get any official coaching. I've had program directors that have directed me in terms of what they wanted. But when I started, just to digress a second, the first time I did drops, and you're going to laugh at this, I was programming a station for Transworld Communications out of Cleveland, Ohio. And they had purchased a station here in Atlanta, and they selected me to be the program director. So this was a complete startup situation. They were changing the format to urban, and we were the first urban station to go up against the incumbent station here. And so I was listening to demos for imaging for the station when we were putting it together, and I found a demo of I had a demo from Mitch Craig over in Memphis, and I liked his stuff, and I said, I went to my general manager. I said, hey, here's the guy I want to do the imaging. And so he listened to it. He said, well, he sounds good. He said, but hell, Mitch, you can do that. I said, but we don't have the equipment. We just got, you know, at the station at that time, we were using an old LBJ board with the knobs you turn, you know, with
all
your hand.
Noisy and dusty. Yeah.
Yeah. And we didn't have any compression in the production studio. I'm like, I can't do the drops in there. He said, I'll tell you what. He said, you find a studio and I'll pay for the studio time, and you just go in and produce it. So I did that. And so that's how I got started doing imaging, because my sound on the drops were so different, and I was doing the afternoon show and programming the station. And so that's how I got started. So when the Jack the Rapper convention used to come to Atlanta, and all the program directors from the urban industry was in town, and they listened to the station. They're like, man, the station sound good. Who's that doing your drops? I said, that's me. They said, oh, that's bullshit. I'm like, no, that's me. And they said, well, but can you do something for me? So the first program director to get me to do stuff was Joe Bullard down in Tallahassee, Florida, at WANM. It was an AM station. And his station bled into Albany, Georgia, and it was a program director there that heard it, and he called me. He said, man, you doing that stuff for Bullet down in Tallahassee? I said, yeah. He said, man, I need you to do some stuff for me. He said, Bullet's going to get ticked off because my signal gets into his area. I said, okay. So anyway, I did it, and he had a 100,000-watt FM-er. And so from there, that's how it kind of mushroomed out. But as far as any direct coaching to teach me how to do imaging, it was listening to Mitch Craig and Bumper Morgan. And what was so funny is that I'm on an urban station, I'm imitating Mitch Craig, and Mitch Craig is imitating a black man. So I'm imitating a white man who's imitating a black man and to get to do drops for an urban station. And so so if I had to put two guys on a pedestal, it's Mitch Craig and Bumper Morgan. You know, back in the 80s, these guys were dominating the imaging world. And I listened to them, and I started that was my foundation for what I sound like, you know, even today in terms of attitude and pitch and resonance in the voice and how to back off and how to sound nonchalant on one line and come back hard on the next line, because you want to make I do imaging sort of like writing a sentence. You got punctuations, you got commas, you got periods, you got exclamation points, you got question marks. And so when I'm doing voiceover, I try to put that sound into each thing that I'm reading. So if I'm reading a drop, inside of the drop, it may be a question attitude without asking a question, or it may be an emphatic statement. You know what I'm saying? So it's a difference in how you deliver what you do in order to make it work for that individual station or that individual programmer. So my coaching has come from one of the greatest coaches I had was Michael Spears, and at KKDA out in Dallas when he was alive. Yeah. But Michael told me, he said, Mitch, he said, you got a great voice. You know, back then, all the imaging guys sound like, I'm going to kick your ass if you don't tune in now. You know, he said, well, he said, smile a little bit, you know, be happy. You don't have to be so mean. It's like you sound like the people look at the radio and get scared. It's like, wow, this guy's coming off like he's going to kick my ass if I don't listen to the radio. So that was the biggest coaching that I got, and he would work with me through lines. And so what I learned from him, I would spread to the other stations as well in terms of being able to give reads pertinent to what the programmer wanted or what the station was. And the other thing that I would do, it was more complicated back in the day, but nowadays it's even better. If I get a call from a station, say, in Buffalo, New York, and they tell me their station is Urban AC, then what I will do is I will go to Radio Locator and find their competition, and I will listen to them before I start producing their stuff, because I have to interface and position their sound to be emphatically different and maybe sometimes better than the station across the street is doing, you know?
Yeah.
And that's how I develop what I do.
Wow, those are great. Tell me you told Mitch Craig that story at some point in your life.
I've never had a chance to tell Mitch that. Actually, you got a good point. I should call him and tell him. When I was programming in Richmond, I actually used Bumper Morgan to do my imaging at that station. And Bumper gave me some of the secrets that he was doing in terms of his sound back in the day that I won't share to this day because he made me swear not to tell it.
Yeah.
But, I think I will look Mitch up and call him, because, I mean, if it wasn't for him, I would not be doing what I'm doing.
I feel like a dream roundtable for my podcast would be you, Mitch Craig, and Bumper on one show.
That would be fantastic.
The dream show. Okay. I'm just taking time from you because you haven't thrown me off the phone yet here.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted to know, someone of your experience who's just been at, you know, the highest of levels and you're still killing it, have you been hard at it for, is it well over 25 years now?
Yeah, it's well over 25 years. I've been doing radio since I was 16. That's the only full-time sustenance I've had since I was 16 years old. There's been periods when I didn't want to move again, so I would work some other type of gigs. I would do front-of-the-house engineering with sound companies because of my technical background and that kind of thing. But you know, I didn't get into all the moving thing. I've worked in Richmond, Virginia, Houston, Texas, and Atlanta and Lake Charles, Louisiana, as far as moving locations, but I always wound up back here in Atlanta. I like this city. So now I just do the production stuff, but it's been a long time. I would guess, 46 years?
See, I was going to say, so we got to be north of 40. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
In all that time, you know, you've seen the massive evolutions of radio, you know. I mean, I'd say it was at its peak in the middle 90s, perhaps, as far as money goes, at least. You know, I hate negativity, but let's start on at least the negative side of this question. What's something that you were sort of sad to see trend in the industry, or something you didn't really like about what happened in the industry?
Well, in 1996, the demise of the Telecommunications Act, when people could buy a huge amount of radio stations and operate. And the thing that hurts the most to me is being able to, it used to be you can get in your car and drive from New York to to California, and you can hear the regional difference in the music and the presentations of the radio stations. And now it doesn't make sense for me to be sitting in New York and listening to the radio and then go to California and hear the same doggone thing. It doesn't wash, you know what I mean, in terms of the music and everything. You know, like in Chicago, it used to be the king of the house music. Florida was bass music, and so on and so forth. So you don't have those differences anymore because of the fact that corporate entities own the radio stations, and they run it like a corporation, of course. So they have a national program director who has his vision of what the radio station sounds like. And if you're born and raised in Chicago, there's no way that you should like what's going on in Miami, Florida, you know, or vice versa. So that's what you have now. You have cookie cutter, carbon copy radio stations all over the country. And that hurts the music industry. It hurts the radio industry, of course. And it has cheapened our craft, you know. And then on top of that, the other thing is just that there are so many different people that now offer imaging, but they're not imaging directors or managers or voice talents because of the fact that equipment is so cheap now. Anybody can start a studio with, you know, $300 or $400. You're in business. And then the other side of that is guys that work as production directors at radio stations will use the station studios to produce stuff so they can do it cheaper than what I would do it. You know, like for a concert tour, for instance, you got guys out here doing spots for $75 a city, you know, and they sound almost like Mitch, but for the client, almost like Mitch is worth $75 as opposed to paying $300 or $500 that I might charge him, you know, depending on what the product is.
Yeah, that's those are things that have been discussed, and that's without a doubt. I would say if I was able to travel in time, I'd probably go back to the 60s, and the first thing I would do is I'd like to go to the future. Don't get me wrong. I want to travel to the future. But I would go back to the 60s, and I'd turn on the radio, and then I'd love to travel because I think it's something that people, and even in my generation, I'm not that much younger than you, but you know, people born in the late 70s and 80s, they don't really even know what you're talking about. You know, they don't know regional radio like that.
Right. And that you're so true about that. You know, it's to the point where young people, you know, my youngest son is 24 years old. And to this day, he cannot give you the name of a DJ.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, because he doesn't have a relationship with the radio station, because here in Atlanta, there's 9 stations that's vying for the urban listener, you know, and out of that mix, you probably got about 4 or 5 of them that are some form of hip hop. So you don't have a chance to just say, that's my guy. You know, we all know Wolfman Jack. We know who that is. I don't care if you're black, white, or green. You know who that is, you know, or Casey Kasem. You know, we know who that guy is, you know, but
Howard Stern, right? I mean,
Howard Stern, absolutely.
Everybody knows him. They hate him. If they hate him, it doesn't matter. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. So, but now the generation is different. They don't latch on to the DJs because they don't listen to one station long enough to form a relationship with the personality. And so that's the part. And unfortunately, for the radio stations, that's bad because they don't have a relationship with the radio station. So they can't count on people listening consistently. Nowadays, you'd be lucky to get 15 minutes of listening time out of a listener in any major city nowadays because they got so many options.
Yeah, yeah. And not to play devil's advocate and not even to defend stations or companies, even though I work for one. But, you know, there is the idea that when you let the talent get so big, they have so much leverage, you know, they could actually take a brand down with them. Like, well, we haven't seen it yet, but like Big Boy in L.A., you know, we're going to have to see what happens there. So stations have to protect themselves by not letting their talent get too big. They have to focus on the brand just to protect themselves is the other side, perhaps.
Yeah, because in 96, when they started that, you know, when companies started to pile on stations under one banner, that was, I guess, one of the reasons why my business took off so great, because the stations were saying that, hey, the music and the radio station is the star, not you.
Right.
You know, as a jock. So, you know, jocks had limited mic breaks. You know, you can do 30 seconds or 60 second mic break, and you need to be in and out and gone, you know?
Soon it became seven. I would say that's funny. That's ironic that probably your big negative is one of the reasons you became so huge, because they all wanted to sound the same. So it's a little bit of a double-edged sword there. Let's take you a little more positive, though. I'd love to hear from you, just as you've seen over these years, over these decades, you know, what is your favorite thing about radio, or the best, the most positive aspect that has continued throughout these years?
I think it is, you know, there's a lot of recording artists and music that gets the breakthrough because of the fragmentation of the radio. In other words, it's like back in the day, if you had an urban station, we would call it, you program from the cradle to the grave. So at some point on the station, you're going to hear something for kids. At some point, you're going to hear something for adults. And at some point, you're going to hear something for the older audience. But now you can pick a niche format and you can hear all the latest hip hop, or you can hear all the latest R&B, or you can hear all the old school, you can hear all the classic rock. And that kind of thing. I think that's been a great positive in terms of for the artist. And then with the fragmentation, it also opens the door for a number of DJs that may not have gotten a chance. Because when you listen to hip-hop radio, some of these guys sound like they just walked in out of the club and got on the radio. Whereas in my day, you had to have some skills.
Yeah.
You know, at least be able to communicate with proper English to get on the radio. But now it's like... You know, what it is coming up, I got that fit team, you know.
Yeah.
That kind of thing. It's like, oh, you a DJ. But the only thing I would say to anybody who's in hip-hop radio or rhythmic CHR radio, if you intend to be in radio past your 40s, please understand that the way that they're delivering now has to change. You can't use slang when you get to an adult radio station, you know, and you don't want to be the oldest teenager on the radio. You know, and so
you're not going to talk the same on Hot New York as you are Kiss, I guess.
Exactly. There you go.
Yeah.
And that's the but the positive side is opportunities, more opportunities for talent, and also for the recording industry and the recording artists. And some of the artists that are broken through now wouldn't have gotten in if we were just one format, you know.
Oh yeah, that, you know, and it's I can apply what you said to country a little bit, maybe not as wide even, but country was the cradle of the grave type of a format for sure, and then classic country. But now that we've got Cumulus's Nash Icon sort of pushing into a hot AC version of country. Anyway, this is about you, not about country. The final question that I like to ask everybody that I interview, and I think it'll be even more cool to hear what you have to say. Speaking as, you know, a voice talent more than as a former radio programmer or a production person, but as a voice talent, what is the number one, the most key thing one should focus on as an up-and-comer to be successful in your industry?
Work on your vocal craft and your ability to interpret and to deliver copy, because equipment is always going to change. You look at it like the automobile industry. At one point, we had horses and buggies to get from one place to another. Now we've got cars and trucks and motorcycles and airplanes and all kinds of transportation. But one thing that was consistent is people had to get somewhere. And so in this business, work on your vocal ability to deliver copy and be current with the trends and styles that are current today. And that will keep you eating for a long time. And the thing about it is, if you're able to control your voice and your sound, age is not a factor, you know?
Yeah.
Because, I mean, I'm you know, some stations, I got some hip-hop stations that people would be blown away if they knew that the guy talking to them was 57 years old, you know? So... That's the most important part, is work on your craft in terms of your voice and your ability to deliver and interpret copy.
The original voice of urban radio, Mitch Faulkner. Hey, Mitch, man, I really, really appreciate it. I took way more of your time than I should have, but thank you so much for doing the show.
thank you very much. I enjoy doing it. This is, you know, we don't get a chance to really talk about what we do. It's not that kind of gig. So anytime we can do that, I enjoy it.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. All right. And I'm going to have to put together a dream roundtable of some sort down the road, and you'll be a part of it. So until next time, talk to you later, Mitch.
Okay.
All right. One more time, I will say a big, humongous, monstrous, hearty, grateful thank you to Mitch Faulkner for his valuable time. I just had a great time with that interview. We got a little bit into the history, which is always fun. Some really cool stories, but some real matter-of-fact business stuff, too. So, again, I hope you enjoyed it as much as I did. I really had a good time talking with Mitch. The links are on my website, but as you heard him say, he doesn't actually have his own website. He had a friend build one for him. The Weebly site probably has the most information, and it has more demos on there too. So that is what I've linked on the podcast page. You can go there and check that out. Or if you do a Google search for Mitch Faulkner, quite a bit of information comes up because dude's been around quite a while. So lots out there to learn about Mitch if you still want to learn mo. If not, then you can await the next interview. Again, yeah, just sit there. Don't do anything for about 3 to 4 weeks. No, but my next interview will be Drew Hall, FLZ imaging producer, director, and also iHeart CHR National Imaging King. One of, I believe, like their three top national CHR producers. His voice is heard many a station. Drew's just a great dude, too. Like I said, I've already got that interview in the can. Another fun one. Might have to be a two-parter. I'll just hint at that yes, we went into a lot of stuff because that dude is doing a lot of things, and he's constantly working. So it'll be a fun one to hear as well. For now, I'm just going to say thank you for checking it out. The 80th episode of the Producers Podcast is in the can. I am going to the cool climate of Las Vegas, Nevada. So I'm leaving the 100 Texas for the 106 Vegas, I guess. But whatever, I'm fine with it. Otherwise, I'll talk to you next time. Bye.
Contact the show, contribute your opinions, see additional content, or simply stay connected at producerspodcast.com.